Here we go. If you do have your Bibles, which I hope you do, open up to Luke 14. We're actually in week two of a series simply called Honor, where we're asking the question, what does God consider a person to be when they're a person of honor? How does God value that, define that, describe that? So I want to start with the story of one of the greatest, maybe one of the greatest stories of honor of all time. It was September 8th, 2009. Marine Corporal Dakota Meyer, along with a team of Marines, Army soldiers and Afghan soldiers were making their way into the Gunjgal Valley. The Afghan elders of that village had stated that they wanted to defect from the Taliban and establish security forces there. And so it was Dakota Meyer and this team of military that were going to go in, and they were going to be the first military presence there to establish security and safety. As they entered the valley, the terrain became too rocky for the trucks to continue. And so these soldiers went on foot from there, approaching the village at the other end of the valley, and Dakota Meyer was tasked with securing the vehicles. So he had to stay behind. Just yards from entering the village, their team came under heavy fire. This whole thing had been a ruse. It had been a setup. They had been set up and now were under attack. They called in air support. None came. For 45 minutes, Dakota Meyer had to sit back with a few other soldiers and watch this onslaught take place, helpless to go into the fight and help because his officers had said, "Do not leave the trucks behind." This went on for 45 minutes, an hour. And about an hour in, Dakota Meyer looked at Navy Staff Sergeant Juan Rodriguez Chavez and said, "We're going in." And Juan jumped in the front seat of the armored truck. Dakota jumped in the back of it, manned the gun, and they drove through this gauntlet of the kill zone. They ran across their first group of injured soldiers before ever reaching the village, with bullets hitting the armored vehicle and whizzing by their heads. He jumped out of the truck. They loaded up the injured soldiers and then carted them out on the truck to safety. It wasn't close to being over. Rodriguez, Chavez, and Meyer drove a truckload of soldiers in and out of there three times. And the third time, their truck received so much fire that their truck broke down, but there were still men in there. So they decided, "We're going to get another truck." This time it wasn't an armored truck. They drove this other truck in there for a third trip, a fourth trip, a fifth trip. And on their fifth trip in, Meyer took such heavy fire that he jumped from the truck, ran to the village, jumped in a trench, and landed on Gunnery Sergeant Edwin Johnson, who was dead. The four Marines who had pushed furthest into the village had all been killed. This is the name of the four men: First Lieutenant Michael Johnson, Staff Sergeant Aaron Kennefick, Gunnery Sergeant Edwin Wayne Johnson Jr., and Hospital Corpsman Third Class James R. Layton. The two Marines, Rodriguez Chavez and Dakota Meyer, did not leave them behind. And the dead bodies were returned to their families. Two men, in the face of impossible odds, chose to put the needs of their fellow soldiers and Marines ahead of their own welfare. It was a heroic day by anyone's standards. 2 years later, on September 17th, 2011, Dakota Meyer was invited to the White House, where the president awarded him the highest honor bestowed on any Marine, the Medal of Honor. What did Dakota Meyer request? He asked for two things. He said, "I want services to run concurrently to this service of honor for all those who were lost in that battle." And he also said, "My second request is I want to sit down and have a beer with the president." So they did. There's an awful lot of people who had interviewed Dakota Meyer, and one journalist asked him this: "Did you think you were going to die?" Without even pausing, he stated, "I didn't think I was going to die. I knew I would die." But then he makes this remarkable statement: "If you didn't die trying, you didn't try hard enough." Coming up in just 10 days, On March 25th is National Medal of Honor Day. I didn't even know that kind of day existed, but now I do. And on that day, I hope you'll remember people like Corporal Dakota Meyer. But recognize that the medal that he received for self-sacrifice is called the Medal of Honor. There's something about heroism that people attach honor to that. And so we're in the middle of this series called Honor, and I want to ask this question. So if that's how we define honor, how does God define honor? And what is it that we're aiming for? Because I think what lives in every single one of us is this desire to be a man of honor, a woman of honor, someone who lives by this kind of code that we stick to that honors, first of all, God, and second of all, each other. Last week, we took a look at this, that in order to honor God, here was our whole point, that we first needed to honor Jesus, his son, by showing loyalty to who Jesus is. See, you can't honor God unless we recognize that Jesus was the first one to live out that motto of, I knew I was going to die. But if I didn't die trying, you didn't try hard enough, right? Jesus was the one who gave his life for us, right? He's the one who died on a cross so that we could be saved, rescued, and forgiven. So today, that was last week, right? So today, I want to continue by looking at the next step of being a person of honor before God. So in your Bibles, Luke chapter 14, I'm going to start in verse 1. Jesus is in a situation where honor and dishonor is going to be defined. And this is how the story goes. Luke chapter 14, verse 1. One Sabbath, when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. Now notice where he's at. He is at a party, and it's hosted by a prominent Pharisee. Now a Pharisee was going to be a very important person of their town, but when it says a prominent Pharisee, this is going to be one of those can't-miss events in town. Important people are there. It's the kind of event that if you didn't normally wear a tie, you're throwing on a suit and tie for this one. It's the kind of event that when you walk into, you're looking for the BMOC, right? The big man on campus. There are important people at this event. It's the kind of event where if you make a social miscue or say something or act awkward, like this could be very detrimental to your reputation. You could be the dishonorable person in the village at that point. And this is what happened, verse 2. There in front of Jesus was a man suffering from abnormal swelling of his body. Jesus asked the Pharisees and the experts in the law, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? And they remained silent. Here's the question. It's not complicated. He just asked them, do we help him? Do we put his needs above the religious rules of the day that say we shouldn't work on a Sabbath day? And his critics don't say anything. They don't speak because they know this. They know that, well, the right thing to do would probably be to help this guy. And Jesus, knowing that he can heal people, the right thing to do would be to help him and heal him. But they know that there is this rule, and a religious rule, one that honors God, right? And Jesus is about to turn this upside down to say, you know what, following all these religious rules isn't the thing that actually honors God. Jesus does this, verse 4. So taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him on his way. Then he asked them, the people who were looking on, the people who were silent, had nothing to say. They asked this question. Jesus says, if one of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately, I mean, not later on, but immediately pull it out? And they still had nothing to say. Verse 6. Listen, if your kid fell into a well, and by the way, if you don't have a kid and you have an ox and the ox falls into the well, first of all, that's weird. Like, how big is that well? That's a big well, right? Would you not help that kid out of the well? That's his question. And everyone is silent. No one dares to answer his question. But the reality is, it's a rhetorical question. Of course they're going to help their own kid out of the well. They're going to break whatever religious rules they need to. Why? Because it's their kid. Because it's their ox, because it's personal. Parents, which one of you would not help your kid in a moment where they were in danger and in need? It's a no-brainer, right? Why? Because it's your kid, because it's my kid. But that man who stood in front of Jesus, that's somebody's kid. It's someone's son. It's someone's dad. It's someone's brother. It's not a nobody. He belongs to someone. So Jesus asked, would you help him? If you would help your kid that way, would you help someone who's not your kid with the same intensity, with the same commitment, with the same type of honor? So let's look at what's at risk here for just a moment. What's at risk is this. It's honor among your peers. You step outside the expected norm of the day, particularly the expected religious norm of the day, and you risk whether you're going to be a part of the honored group in town, or you risk whether you will forever be that dishonorable person who broke the rules just to help this guy, because maybe you could have helped him the next day, the next week. Here's my point. If we're going to take a look at a person of honor, point number one is this. A person of honor doesn't aim at being heroic, but aims at being helpful. Hear me in this. Dakota Meyer, his actions were deemed worthy of honor by earning a Medal of Honor. So is that what it takes for you and I to be a person of honor, to be a hero, to do something heroic? To be a person of honor. Jesus defines it this way. A person of honor is one who is helpful by putting the needs of other people first at great cost to themselves. I was reminded of it this last week. I was running some errands. It was getting kind of late at night. And I pulled my truck into the Office Max next to the Whole Foods parking lot right there. And I found like one of the only spots that was still open. I parked, and next to me was a guy changing his tire on his car. He had a flat. And so I ran into the copy place and got my copies made before they closed. And as I was coming back out, I thought, you know what? It's dinner time, a little after dinner. It's getting late. I should eat something. So I went into the fine dining establishment known as Chipotle, got me some vittles, went back to my truck and was hungry. And the guy was still there sweating away, changing his tire. So I hopped in my truck, opened my Chipotle, gobbled down just a couple bites, rolled my window down and said, do you need any help? He said, actually, I'm almost done. So I joked with him. I said, well, leave it to me to be the guy that asks when the job is almost done, right? And he said this to me. He said, at least you stopped and asked. Thousands of people have driven by us and nobody stopped and offered help. It was interesting. There's moments like this that happen in our lives where God kind of puts a finger on your heart and you realize something, to pay attention to this. And it was at that moment that I was reminded what people feel when their life breaks down, when their finances break down, when their health breaks down, when their marriage breaks down, when their friendships break down. People feel left out and they feel left behind. That's the story of people in need. They feel left out, they feel left behind. And maybe the reality is not enough honorable people to stop and pause and say, how can we help you? How can we step in and simply be a person of honor by asking this question? Because a person of honor has a voice, they have a phrase, and they ask this question, how can I help? So I want to say this. If you want to be a man of honor, a woman of honor, you're not looking for moments of heroism. You want to be a hero to your kids? You're not looking for those moments to save their life. Maybe those will come. You're looking for those moments to be helpful with them. You want to be a hero to your wife? Don't try to be the heroic act of, you know, saving her from a car that she's about to get hit by. Do the dishes. Let's be a hero. It's one thing, and all the women said, yeah. There were some amens in the homes right now. The point is this, it's not about trying to be a hero. Let me say this carefully, and if you tune me out a little bit, you have to tune in here right now, because I'm going to say something that could be really misconstrued. So I say this with unbelievable respect to all of our military. You may have done some unbelievably heroic things in your life, and I salute you, applaud you. Some of you may even have earned a Medal of Honor. I know there's a little more than 100 living Medal of Honor recipients in the world today. We have plenty of honorable Marines and soldiers. But I want you to stop and hear me in this, that a heroic act doesn't necessarily mean that it's an honorable life. What I mean by that is, how many of our soldiers, when they return home, have struggled to be helpful or to connect relationally in the civilian life? And hear me in this. This is the part I need you to hear. We have so many soldiers suffering from PTSD, in need of help and encouragement. But one, and here's, stick with me here, but that one moment of a heroic act brings great honor on you, but it doesn't create a person of honor who lives an honorable life, because you can do that one act of heroism and still have an entire life where you're not actually helpful for people and caring about them. So I hope you don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not criticizing our soldiers and those who are struggling as they come home. Love you, want to help you, whatever we can do to support you in that. So hear that, but I want you to know this. Any one of us, that if we perform some act of heroism, think that now we're a person of honor, I don't think that's how Jesus defines it. I think he defines it by someone who's helpful. This story that Jesus is involved in is actually far from over. Take a look at verse 7. This continues on. When Jesus noticed how the guests picked the places of honor, so here it is, they're picking places of honor, so this whole event is about honor, at the table, he told them this parable. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this person your seat. Then humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. But when you are invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he will say to you, friend, move up to a better place. Then you'll be honored in the presence of all the other guests. And then he makes this principle. Look in verse 11. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all those who humble themselves will be exalted. Here's my second point in being a person of honor. It's this. A person of honor doesn't seek out honor, but practices humility. And then trust that God will honor whom he chooses. That means that they're good with it. Whether they ever get recognized for the good thing that they did, for the contribution, even an act of heroism, they're good if they never get recognized or honored for it, because they're not concerned with climbing the social ladder. In 1995, Peter Kendall and Linda Young, Tribune staff writers for the Chicago Tribune, they wrote an article on fakers and cheaters who were seeking honor from people. In 1995, there were 185 Medal of Honor of winners, Medal of Honor recipients alive that day. But they uncovered hundreds of people who faked it. They somehow made their own Medal of Honor and claimed that they had earned that in battle. They were trying to earn something, and you might not know this, but the government, actually, if you're a Medal of Honor recipient, they give you financial rewards, extra stipends, they give you recognition, free air travel, all kinds of stuff like that. These fakers weren't trying to earn that. They were actually trying to earn something else. Recognition from each other. Maybe on their resume, they were hoping to get that job, get that promotion. Or maybe they were just as simple as they would brag about it in a bar and want free beer. Whatever it was, they wanted to be honored by people. But the truth is this, a person of honor doesn't seek honor, but practices humility and trusts that God will honor whom he chooses. So in being a person of honor, I think it just asks this question. Who are you trying to receive honor from? From God or from people? Because when we choose to be helpful, can we do it in such a way that we're not necessarily bragging about ourselves or noticed? Can we almost fly under the radar of people recognizing who's doing the good deeds and just ask the question, how can I help? There's a third part to this. So Jesus says, hey, when you attend the party, don't seek the place of honor. And then he turns the tables and he says this, if you ever host a party, look at verse 12. If you ever host a party, Jesus said this to the host, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives, your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, so you'll be repaid. Verse 13, but when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you'll be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. So who do you not invite? Here it is. Don't invite friends, brothers, sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. Now recognize this, there is some hyperbole here. He's not telling you that you can never have your family over to your house. I know for some of you that sounds delightful, right? You never have to invite them over again. But that's not, I think, actually what he's saying. Why not invite them? Because of this. Then they owe you. And they actually have the ability to repay you. And there's an obligation there. So Jesus says this, here's who I want you to invite. If you're the host, if you have the resources to bless, if you have the resources to help, here's what you do. You invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Why? Because people just drive by them. They get left behind and left out all the time. No one invites them, and they are systematically left behind. And the second reason, because they can't reciprocate. They can't reward you. They cannot pay you back that gift. You will not be honored by people for doing this. Most of the time, people will honor you for those that you invite that have influence, that are popular, that are the cool kid on the block. But the reality is this, and Jesus says, if you want to impress God, God gives you a promise. He'll bless you when you invite people, when you honor people that actually have no way of honoring you back. In this moment, to be a person of honor, let's make sure we understand whose honor we're actually desiring. Is it people or is it God's? Here's what I think Jesus is pointing to, and this is our third and final point, is that a person of honor gives honor. He doesn't just receive honor, look to how to get it, but a person of honor gives honor to the hurting, the vulnerable, and people who cannot reward your generosity. Proverbs 22:4 says it this way, humility is the fear of the Lord. Its wages are riches and honor and life. Humility? Humility is our reverence and our respect of God, wanting to please him and honor him. The payday for humility, the wages of humility, what we get is riches and honor and life, not from people, from God. You know, we're in a really odd season with this coronavirus. I kind of want to turn it around, though. Instead of the threat of the coronavirus, can I say it this way? What's the gift of the coronavirus? I think it may have given you a gift. Maybe not all of you, but some of you, it gave you a gift. And here's the first gift. It gave you the gift of time. Many of you are now working from home instead of commuting to work, right? How much time did that give you? And actually, what will you do with that time? I know so many of you were really excited. I get to work from home. Your kids are at school and now you're at home and maybe your spouse is working from home. A little extra connection time, right? And then Friday, school's canceled. And you get the second gift, the gift of family. Your kids can't go to school. You're going to have plenty of family time available. And I'm going to say this, you can choose to binge watch Netflix and Disney Plus, and maybe that is going to be a survival technique for some of you in this season. But let me just ask you this, what will you do with your time together as a family? Will you make small steps in asking the question, how can I help? And by the way, mark my words on this, all right? 9 months from now, it's going to be the brand new baby boom season, all right? Mark my words, you heard it here first. 9 months from now, it is going to be the baby boom season. Here's the third gift that the coronavirus, I think, is giving us. The gift of opportunity. See, we can look out for ourselves and shop for ourselves and stock up for ourselves, or we can ask this question, how can I help? See, schools are closed, and there's some kids who rely on school for a breakfast and for a lunch. I had someone, a friend of mine, post on Facebook just to say this. If there's any families, any kids who your kids are relying on meals, you look me up. I will help. Another person put a notice that if you have a suppressed immune system or you're the elderly, they said the grocery store is no longer a safe place for you, right? Let me know. I'm happy to run errands for you. I'm happy to go out, and I'm happy to help. Question, in this season, I think people of honor are going to look around and just ask the question, how can I help? Why? Because that's what people of honor do. And that's, I think, how God defines honor. So let me say it this way. Would you look around at your neighbors, at your friends, at people you know who might be vulnerable during this season, and simply ask this question, if you're a person of honor before God, and just say, how can I help? How can I serve you? And you might have a way to help and not know where to help. Because, I mean, let's just be clear about this, right? The people who have all the financial resources tend to live in the same community. And those who don't have the financial resources, they live in a different community, right? So checking on your neighbor might not be all that helpful. So let me say it this way. If you have a resource to give away or help and you're not sure where to do that, just contact us. We have a pastor of compassion. Her name is Susan Ellis. Look her up online. By the way, I didn't cover this with her, so she's about to get some emails that she doesn't know about. Email her and say, I would be happy to help shop for people. I'd happy to help in this way, in that way. And she'll figure out what are the needs. Here's the second part of that. If you have a need, like I really should not go out into the community right now, then email Susan. Figure out her email. It's right there on our website. And email her and say, I have these needs, and we'll see if she can put some of these together. Matthew 15:8, we'll end with this. Jesus said, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. He was looking at Jewish church people of his day. And he said, oh yeah, they say all the right things, but their hearts are far from me. We ain't that kind of church. And so I would say this, to be a person of honor, we simply ask this question, how can I help? And I hope in this season, you and I keep asking that question. How can I help? How can I help? How can I help? And look where God brings opportunity your way. That's what people of honor do. Let's pause for a moment and pray. God, I thank you that you reward and honor your people as they serve, and they just try to be helpful. And God, sometimes it's nice to aim for that hero story, but reality is, God, most of us will never live that. We don't want to be a hero. We just want to be helpful. And so, God, I pray that you would coordinate the needs and those with resources in such a way that we actually could be helpful. And God, help us to not just ask, but to take initiative on being kind and being generous. And so, God, as you do, I would ask that those that are sick and hurting right now, God, that you'd bring health and healing to them. God, I pray that you would protect, shut down the spread of this virus, God. But let us be people of perspective that this world here and now is not all we live for. We live for heaven and being with you together forever. And we look forward to that day. Until then, God, help us to be people of honor. And we pray that in Jesus' name, amen.